So I thought I would start by introducing the context within which we're having this conversation, which is an exhibition in Berlin at Gallery Weißer Elefant with the title After Monoculture. And it's happening now from April till June 2023. And this exhibition is curated by me, Lisa Rosendahl, and includes works by three artists, Marcelina Velmö, Åsa Sonjasdotter, and you, Jakob Jakobsen. And perhaps it's a nice way to begin this conversation is to actually trace back a little bit the origins of this exhibition and why I approached you, why I wanted to invite you to contribute. So I was invited by the gallery and presented with the work of Marcelina Velmö, which is the main work that was shown to me. It was a film that she has made recently that starts in Hamburg at the container port outside Hamburg and somehow moves its way up to the industrial landscapes of the very north of Sweden. So the steel industry at first, but then also all the way to the mines, the iron mines in Kiruna, for example. So I was basically asked to respond to her work and to make some kind of exhibition. And as I am myself Swedish and I have worked with the question or questions associated with industrial modernity in Scandinavia for the last few years, I thought it was interesting to work also with her perspective on this and her work. And I immediately thought about the quite recent film by Åsa Sonjasdotter about monoculture, but about agricultural monoculture and the history of that in Scandinavia, in the south of the country, in Skåne, also with some inspiration from Denmark and from the Carlsberg Brewery, and who were the first to actually develop monocultural production of yeast to stabilize the brewing of beer, that in turn then influenced the Swedish Farming Research Institute to start to do research into how to create monocultural crops. So to basically find the ideal specimen of each plant and more or less clone it until you could have a mass production with very high crop yields and super effectivized farming. And that in turn then influenced or was researched by German agricultural scientists who began to implement these methods on a really large scale. And this is what we're living with today, is kind of global monocultural farming. And of course, there are connections there that Åsa hints to in her film, but perhaps doesn't go too deep into, but with National Socialism and the idea of the ideal human being and so on. So I had these two works in mind, Marcelina's film looking at industrialized contemporary landscapes in Europe, and then Åsa's documentary focusing on agricultural monoculture. But when I visited the gallery and walked around the rooms there, I was also so taken by the architecture, actually. Because the gallery has been around for over 30 years, as far as I'm aware. So it was running as a gallery, as an art space, also before the wall came down in the east part of Berlin. And it's located one story up in a residential building. So I guess it used to be an apartment, I presume, one of these old Berlin apartments. And it still has some of those features. It has the old wooden floors. It has the kind of high ceilings and wood chip wallpaper. And long, narrow rooms, perhaps 2 meters wide maximum, that are somehow too small for any type of human activity. And I felt very uncomfortable in these rooms. And I kept wondering, like, who is meant to be in these rooms? Like, what type of person can fit into these rooms? And what type of human activity? I mean, even if it was a toilet or a super tiny office, you know, it would still feel very strange. And that actually made me realize that the human dimension of a kind of monocultural, contemporary, late capitalist society that needs to be made more explicit in this exhibition. And I thought about your work, which I followed for some time and really appreciate on many different levels, and how your research into the history of mental health care in Scandinavia, particularly in Denmark, but also your search for resistances to, let's say, a kind of modern healthcare with undertones of effectivization of the human. So to how to find strategies of resistance to that. I thought this would be a very interesting addition to this exhibition, and to bring together these three practices. But then I also, of course, remembered that you had quite recently, 2 years ago now maybe, actually resigned from the art world. So I thought, okay, so what does this actually mean? But I contacted you anyway. And perhaps that's a good way to open up the conversation here and ask you what were your thoughts when I approached you, and have you really resigned from the art world?
I have resigned. I made this letter in the end of 2021, this letter of resignation. And that was actually like something I had been planning for a little while, because I was not so well and I didn't feel very well within the kind of cultural industry. I felt, in a way, as I grew older, it was more and more difficult for me to kind of resist just becoming a little worker within that system, and like supply content to this kind of wide-ranging industry that is the art industry, cultural industry. And at the same time, I was like myself ill. I was been suffering from anxiety and depression for whole my life, and I felt I just couldn't take it anymore. So I decided that I wanted to resign, also as a protest, of course. I was getting more and more exhausted, and also getting more and more indifferent in a way, because you can say like the best artist is an indifferent artist that is just reaffirming the structures that she or he is a part of. And I was like feeling that things were getting like too affirmative in a way, or like too in a way accepting these kind of structures more and more. And I felt I didn't have the energy to resist so much anymore. So I was like very exhausted, and I didn't feel the same happiness about doing art that as I've been doing I have been feeling before in terms of like seeing it as a form of resistance, as a way to go against the grain of things. So I decided like a year before I resigned that I wanted to quit. I could somehow maybe see myself getting older and also getting more and more ill. And in a way, just reproduce the same kind of work that I've been doing, also in terms of critical work, because of course, critical work is a very important part of this industry, because that's a way somehow to legitimize its existence in many ways. If it was just like mediated as something positive, something that make people happy and all these kind of stories, like in a way improving the tourist industry and the experience industry and the knowledge industry, we will just be like as any other industry in this kind of postmodern economy. And I felt still I have my feet in punk music and have my feet in like the vanguard of modernity. And I just felt that it was, I was not, I didn't have the energy, I didn't have the resources to fight anymore. So I decided to resign. So I made this letter of resignation, which was like it displayed like publicly on billboards in Copenhagen as a part of a billboard biennial. And it, in that way, it came together in a nice way. So it was, or it became like my last work. Of course, I could have disappeared without no traces, but I thought it was important somehow to say I quit. I can't take it anymore.
But can I ask you already here? I mean, did you, when you performed that gesture, did you also think around the fact that it's perhaps also possible to, or is it possible to resign from the cultural industry, but not resign from the activity of making art, let's say? Was that, how did you think around, is that a possibility or?
I think it was also like in a way a means to quit from my own identity as an artist, like in a way abolish myself, Jakob Jakobsen, because you are a public person as an artist, no matter like how underground you are somehow addressing a public, you're addressing other people. And that kind of subjectivity or that figure, that persona, Jakob Jakobsen, I really wanted to abolish. Because it became like a very, you could call it specialized and professional activity to be me as Jakob Jakobsen. And at the same time, maybe I was also myself caught in this way of thinking that is so common, not only in the cultural industry, but in the in our society as such, like this kind of project thinking. You do a project and then you do the next project and then you, in a way, try to sell it to possible consumers or people who could, in a way, take part or gain something from the project. So so in a way, my last project became my resignation. And it was also a resignation from this way of thinking. And it somehow, I have spent now like 1.5 years on somehow getting out of that way of thinking. Also because I actually honestly need to take care of my health and I have to except that I'm not completely fit to be part of this society in terms of the expectations of being functional and being able to express myself and being able to always be ready for another statement, another artwork, another product. I just felt that I didn't have the resources anymore to be part of that way of production. And instead of just in a way disappearing in that grind, I really decided that I have this kind of urge for change and urge for, you can say, like, another world, a way, another way of living. And if I felt I was compromising in terms of that due to my lack of capacity, I thought it was better to call it quit. Mm. So I did.
But nevertheless, you agreed to show material from Jakob Jakobsen's practice up until the moment he resigned. You suggested a selection of text and object in the form of banners and also an audio recording based on a book that you've written. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why you suggested this group of works for this particular context?
Well, I think it's, in a way, I always enjoyed moving into space and somehow organizing space for people to experience and move through. So I always like that aspect of having the privilege of being an artist. You got somehow offered spaces that you can turn into some kind of spectacle, some kind of experience, some kind of setting for a narrative. So I actually had always had a joy connecting to that, and quite often also found it quite easy or challenging in a nice way to be offered space. And of course these spaces that you offered me was very special, because they are almost as two prison cells and a reception room. Mm. Or maybe a hospital, what do you call it, hospital spaces, or so I somehow immediately found it nice as a setting for a little narrative. It's this kind of combination of an archive of objects and objects carrying some kind of statement and some kind of history, some kind of social activity. And then, in a way, combining it into some sort of a narrative or a spectacle as a little theater play almost, mm. where you could kind of enter into the different rooms and have different, pick up different bits of narrative and, in a way, combine it yourself. I see it maybe some people ask me, oh, is this in a hospital? And it's not really like that. I more see it as a montage of different narratives that is connected to my practice. So there's one room with the letter of resignation on a little nail on the wall, and there's a banner from the Hospital for Self-Medication that I've been using in different circumstances. And then there's the room with the poster and "We Are All Sick," that statement, where people can pick up this text that is somehow a statement from the Hospital of Self-Medication that is on a poster with a text on both sides that somehow, if you hang it on the wall, turns into a little flag. And of course, I wanted people who could be interested to take these posters and bring them home. And then the third, the reception room, the more official room, is there's also a banner, "We All Sick" banner. And then a little zone for the audio piece that is based on this book I published about a hospitalization that I was through for over 3 months in, was it 2019, or I think it was, I'm not sure, and which has been published and somehow read as literature here in Denmark. And it was read on two speakers just in an unusual way. It was a diary of these kind of almost 80 days I was in hospital.
I think it would be interesting to go into all of these fragments or parts of the exhibition one by one. But perhaps first, perhaps I think this phrase, "we are all sick," is like a key entry point, I think, to these three rooms and also to your work on this topic, because it signals what you also say in this first text piece of the same title, "We Are All Sick," that it's not the patient that is sick, it's actually society as a whole. Also moving the attention from the individual to the collective in terms of how we understand illness in this respect.
Yeah, I somehow normally say that it is like in the relation, the illness is in the relation. It's not necessarily like inside society, not necessarily inside the ill individual, but it is in the relationship between society and the individual. That's where the illness unfolds and where it's produced in society. And that's the background for this statement that is, of course, overreaching, but it is like a banner statement. And it was, I'm not sure about, I recall it right, but it was actually made for the launch of the book. This is called Uphör Opera, which means like termination, rebellion, or something like that. It was produced for the launch of this book. That was during Corona. And there was like, you couldn't gather more than 10 people, but like due to the Danish constitution, you could, it was still allowed to make a protest. So during February, like in the local square here in my neighborhood in Copenhagen, I invited for a protest to launch the book, and we made banners for that. And it was like, I can guarantee you no one got Corona, because it was like minus 15 degrees or something, and we had like four other writers that was reading like literature, poetry, and there was a little discussion, and I think we were like 40 people. You don't have to report like or announce a protest like that. You can just invite it, and like according to the constitution, you have that right. So even the police came by. But it didn't cause any problem. But it was staged as a protest, and it was a protest. And in that way, these banners somehow came about.
With the corona as a kind of context, then the idea of sickness must have acquired a different set of associations. Also, how did that work out? Because I was in Germany at the time of Corona, and of course here there were lots of protests as well, but they were protests against, you know, saying basically that Corona is a conspiracy and it's the elite that is trying to contain us and control us in various ways and so on. Did your protest take on that dimension as well in this context, or...?
Of course, I had it in mind, but it was like pretty specifically about mental health, and the people coming reading were all like people with experiences within the Danish mental health system that has somehow elaborated in their writing. And there was like several banners. There was also one banner attacking this whole practice of always needing a diagnosis somehow to fit your illness into the system, you could say. So it was pretty specifically in terms of mental health, but of course I had it in mind, and I thought it was interesting what that kind of statement could provoke. I guess that's also how I work with these statements. I think it's interesting to make a bold statement like that and somehow see what kind of conversations it can generate. So there are no like footnotes, and like I don't want to relativize it in that way. But our protest was clearly relating to, you could say, demystifying the patient, demystifying the people who are in a way pointed out as mentally ill, somehow humanizing these experiences as a common experience, you could say. And there are quite like a few writers here in Denmark and also abroad at the moment that are like dealing with mental health issues and their experience with the psychiatric system and working with it within you could call it a literature format. And it's been changing the last 5 years here in Denmark. There was like a long time where it was called diagnosis literature, and it was like this kind of idea of this individual person suffering. It was not worth considering as literature, but it's changed, I guess, also because it was these attacks from the fine elevated Academy of Literature against these people who were writing about like some real experiences of life in postmodern society, somehow was disqualified and it had a backlash. So that's been like actually quite interesting writings in relation to mental health in Denmark. And then coming back to this statement about it is in the relation. The illness is in the relation, and the relation is like a social relation that is quite often constituted by language. So all this literature is somehow, you can say, helping out or creating more language in these kind of relationships of people being ill. There's a lot of shame connected to being in hospital because there's no language. And it has actually changed. I had the sense that it has changed recently, that actually the language, the you can say the mad language, is somehow entering the mainstream to a certain degree. And I think it's been very helpful for a lot of people, and somehow also criticizing this kind of craziness of this postmodern economy based on growth and productivity and efficiency that is constantly kicking out the waste, constantly kicking out the trash, constantly kicking out people that can't live up to the expectations. And in a way, coming back to my resignation, I also felt like this kind of piece of trash because I just couldn't, in a way, join the rhythm of productivity that was connected to the art scene anymore. And that was like, of course, it's taken me a very long time to acknowledge that I'm actually ill. I had a dream this other night about actually traveling from New York, staying with some friends, and then we had to go to the airport. And we took the lift down and everything was in a hurry. And then I discovered I had no shoes on in the subway. And it was this kind of very violent industrial subway that is the subway of New York. And then a lady came up to me and asked me, "Are you ill?" And that in a way made me understand that this, you can say, my illness is not a project. It's my life condition. It's my material life. And I guess that's also what has been going on in my mind since I resigned. I have somehow tried to incorporate it in my body, in my way of thinking, that I don't have to live up to this rhythm that is always expected of me if I don't want to, you could say, lose out.
But even before you resigned, you started this hospital for self-medication. How would you describe what that actually is, and how it came about?
Yeah, it was, or it somehow is. It was like in the attic of my apartment here in Copenhagen. I had like a spare room, like a little, you can call it like almost Kafkaesque room under the roof, where I somehow imagine, actually, when I was in the official hospital, that I wanted to make another hospital when I came home, when I was discharged. So I did that. And it became like a, you can call it layman, like a communist hospital in the way that it was run by the patients. And it became a meeting place for a lot of people who wanted to have a conversation about mental health and their own experiences. And it happened in different ways. We had like these events called Poetry for People Lying Down, that it was like poets that was reading for people lying down on the floor. As it was an attic space, the floor was pretty big, but the ceiling, or like the height to the ceiling, was not. So we could be like 12, 14 people up there. And it was actually also inspired by some like work I've been doing with patients, as they're called in hospital, about like writing text or writing literature as a part of the daily life in the hospital. And I organized sound therapy, working with a musician, that was somehow like a kind of situation where people could come and make their own sound environment as they somehow wished or wanted to, somehow stimulating some kind of sensual experience. And the space was also organized with these kind of Middle Eastern or Persian rocks on the floor. Of course, it's like a fair generalization, but like I grew up with those kind of floor carpets in my home. And it was somehow, I wrote to my friends like on Facebook, if anyone had like an old rock of that kind of characteristics, or I asked whether I could borrow them. So I got like this kind of patchwork of rocks on the floor up there that was somehow inspired by Sigmund Freud's couch. It is this kind of hump of Middle Eastern or Persian rocks where you lie down as an individual. But I wanted to make flatten it out and make it like a social space where we talked between us, and there was no hierarchy between the patient and the doctor. So it became this kind of floor of conversation, of developing social relations in relation to mental health. And that was also carried on to Berlin for the listening situation in the exhibition there after yes. Monoculture.
Yeah, because you used the same setup with the rugs on the floor and the pillows, and the speakers were positioned on stand, but quite low down, suggesting that the audience or the visitors could sit down and or lie down indeed and listen. And can you reflect a little bit more about that, perhaps? Because previously you also said something about how this environment that you staged in the gallery room, what is it? You know, it's not the hospital per se.
Yeah, it's like this kind of combination of an archive and a theater piece. It's like a spectacle, you could say. But of course, you can kind of move between the different small environments that are created and in the three different rooms that I'm occupying. I also made the light purple somehow to tweak this kind of experience of transparency and whiteness that you normally get in gallery rooms. So you got somehow conscious of the characteristics of the space, of the environment. And I see a little bit like a montage of different parts of the activities I've been doing within this kind of more self-organized, socially based spaces that I've been working with, like the hospital, and like also my, the, you can say, the literary space of the book and the the statement, we all sick. So, and then you can say the resignation. So I see it like a little montage, that's a little film almost, but yeah, where you can walk into the different scenes and hopefully organize the parts in a way that makes sense to you, or maybe not. But at least that's what I'm offering. That's how I see it. But I don't know how people have been experiencing it in Berlin.
Yeah, I also wonder if and how they have picked up on your slightly wonky aesthetics, let's say, because you were quite, it was very nice to install together with you. And, you know, there was a certain lightness also about it and the way you place things, and also that you don't want everything to be perfect or straight or so I wonder if people have picked up on that, because I like very much this contrast between, let's say, Marcelina Velmer's piece, which is this very hard-edged aesthetic, perfectly filmed and also kind of digitally manipulated. So you, in her film, you are somewhere between reality and dystopia, fact and fiction somehow. And of course, showing these environments that are so, you know, these containers in the container harbors of all these different colors and identical sizes and so on, it becomes a very sort of beautiful, abstracted aesthetic. And also Sonja's daughter in her film, she also talks about that, how she finds some glass plates in an archive, some documentation of this farming research institute when they are documenting different kinds of plants and they're trying to find the perfect specimen, and how these images that she found in the archive from the 1800s were, you know, extremely attractive, and she had to somehow stop herself from not just totally going into that aesthetic and using it in her film. And, you know, and then I think about the way you entered the three rooms that you had, your willingness to be human rather than maintaining this system of perfect equilibrium, perfect aesthetics that we are so used to encountering in these white cube situations.
Yeah, I think you see this imperfection in the detail, and it's maybe not so significant, but I guess people can maybe feel it more than they can notice it. But like, things are not straight and the nail is a little bit bent, and like things like that wasn't done deliberately, but like it just happened. And yeah. I think, and I work with your daughter, Odita, that is an amazingly young woman that helped out, and she made also some of the decisions, because I somehow knew, you can say, the parts that was going in, and then it was a more, you could call it, a playful situation. And I think that's, I guess that's felt somehow, hopefully. But I think it was also because it was like also a nice conversation with you and with Osa and with Madalena. I think like coming back to the art industry is like super depersonalized, like professional environment where you are just like have to be demanding. Like priority, and like in a way fighting for your own position. And I think also within this kind of former East German DDR gallery, I think it had just this kind of human touch that I enjoyed, and that was also why I thought it would be nice to take part. Now you invited me because I knew you and been visiting you at home and knew your family. So so all these things have been nice and easy in relation to this project.
In relationship to that, I wanted to ask you also about the book and your process of writing the book. It started as a diary, or it is a diary, or how would you?
It is a diary. It was because I lost my memory. or it's like due to my illness and due to the medication, I just lost my kind of capacity of remembering. So I started when I was in hospital to make a diary somehow to remember as I write. So it was a way of you could say like act of resistance against just like forgetting what was going on in the ward, and somehow like your memory is also the place of the traumas, all the scars, all your life experiences. And I somehow learned that a lot of psychiatry is about memory, and a lot of, you could call it, contemporary psychiatry is about erasing memory. Like, then you forget your trauma, you forget the pain, you forget like what you experienced. And like in the Danish system, the Rolls Royce treatment is electroshock therapy, ECT. It's like, I think for many people, it's a surprise to hear that they actually use ECT still, but that's their main, or their like the crown of the treatment is ECT. And I was in an ECT department myself, and people came back from the treatment and were completely blank. They couldn't remember my name. They couldn't remember anything. It's so much about like erasing memory or memories treatment. And the same happened to me when I got like this kind of strong medication. And they also offered me ECT several times, but I have somehow still rejected. But maybe, I don't know, maybe I need to forget. It might come. But so this diary was about remembering, but also actually about remembering the people I was in hospital with, because it was like a long-term ward that I was in, and there was a lot of people that was of course suffering, but they were also pretty amazing because they had experience within the bottom of the Danish society. It was like we were this kind of collection of trash in a way that has been, they just wanted us not to kill ourselves. That was basically their like success criteria. Like, and like if the positive criteria was like, they wanted like we could be discharged when we could take the bus home, if we had a home, because lots of the people in there was like homeless people that had somehow got a little break in the hospital. So so I imagine this kind of almost like a communist community, like this kind of ship of fools that would be rising up and take power of the hospital and then eventually take power of society and turn it into a much more diverse society with variation and struggle and like noise and joy, instead of this kind of crazy grind that is characterizing the society that is dominating today, that couldn't use any of us in that ward. So it's also like a fantasy about liberation. So it's like it's a combination of my own treatment and a characteristic of the community within the hospital.
There are such strong parallels between what you just described with the medication and the electroshock therapy and the focus on actually erasing, forgetting the trauma, erasing it and so on. And these practices in modernity as a whole on erasure and forgetting and yeah, it's quite fascinating actually how this plays out on an individual level, in this specific case in the mental health system, but then on a societal level, and also on a kind of earthly level in relationship to landscapes and things like this, and to somehow by erasing our ability to keep alive some sort of experience of life, we are left in this empty state of oblivion where we are also, you know, all our energy to change things is sucked out from us, because in fact it is the trauma that will make us stand up and be angry and change things and try to resist. And when that is just erased and our language for that is erased and there are no signs in society as a whole, then who and what do we actually become?
I think that's maybe a good way to end our conversation, Lisa.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. We are heading into the last week of the exhibition. It ends on the 18th of June. But I hope that our conversations can continue way beyond that in many different capacities. So thanks so much, Jakob.
Thank you, Lisa.